Eliminating homelessness in the Valley with a focus on veterans has been a strongly expressed aim of leaders here for a number of years. Former Phoenix mayor and now Congressman Greg Stanton had made it a top priority. But the challenge still exists, and Maricopa County has committed new money to fund major initiatives, including workforce development and expanding West Valley partnerships with Avondale and Surprise to provide additional options for homeless individuals and families. And to learn more, I'm joined by Bruce Liggett. He's Maricopa County's Human Services Director. Bruce, how challenging is the homelessness issue in the county, and what trends are you seeing?
It's a significant problem, and it's a growing trend, not just in Maricopa County, but cities throughout the country, and particularly in the West. The most recent point-in-time count showed that there were 6,600 people who are homeless, 4,000 of them in temporary shelter, and 2,600 on the street.
From an innovative standpoint, what stands out to you as far as what the county's trying to do?
Well, there's so many players in this area, and even in terms of what you were asking about the problem, how is it defined? Yeah. Many people define it as people panhandling on the street. You know, others define it as people who are at risk of homelessness or have been evicted. So defining the problem is really kind of one of the first steps for us. And because there are limited resources, what we all tend to do is prioritize. And the focus tends to be on people who are chronically homeless, people who've been out there on the street for a year or more, and people who tend to be the most users, the first responders have to do, the hospitals, a lot of costs associated with them. Maricopa County works in partnerships, but some innovative pieces that we're connecting this year have to do with connecting employment services for people who are homeless. We run the workforce program. We in the city of Phoenix operate workforce programs in the county. The other major connection is some of our work in the justice system and people who are in the jails, getting out, who are homeless.
Bruce, we've focused a lot on downtown Phoenix. When it comes to other partnerships with other parts of the Valley, how important do you think it is to make sure that the partnerships are even more at least perception-wise, getting out of just the fact of we're thinking downtown Phoenix?
I think that was the perception, and years past, that was kind of what the county was doing in a limited way in the homeless work. The county made a significant financial contribution 14 or 15 years ago to the downtown human service campus. As the county grew and as needs grew, we've made a conscious decision in Maricopa County to start to work closer with and provide more resources to the outlying areas. That point-in-time count I mentioned to begin with shows suburban homelessness is growing, and most notably in Glendale, in Mesa, and in Tempe.
Recently, there was the issue in Scottsdale with the signs up about you don't necessarily have to get to a panhandler, send them to our website or try to get them more information. If you can get information to people who need it, how responsive can they be? Is that a barrier to get over in some cases, to let people know there are resources available?
It is a barrier, but it's connecting with them, first of all. So, you know, the first step is engagement with a person, and they're not always ready at the time we were trying to engage them. I'm not always receptive to people trying to help me. Yeah. It takes a while sometimes to get what I need. The people out there on the streets doing outreach and navigation, helping people navigate through the system because there's so many players. It's a key service. It's not an easy service, and I have great respect for those people who continue to go, and they'll identify something. They'll work with them till they get them. We get them into shelter or housing, and then we can start to really help them work on their issues.
So when it comes to these new initiatives, how do you measure success? What's the time frame? Are you just trying to see gradual progress? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, essentially, we want to have people be stabilized with a goal of them being self-supporting. That's the goal. So much of what we've done has been still relatively new. We've measured what we call rapid rehousing, which is get somebody who may not have a lot of serious mental health issues, but somebody who's got a lot of other barriers. Get them into an apartment, get them started, support them for up to 6 months, help them with services, and that's been highly effective. So the data on whether they're still housed, because that's the outcome we're looking for in that intervention, has been really positive.
Now, we know for a lot of people in the Valley, affordable housing here is, this used to be one of the staples of the Valley, is it was a more affordable place to live. Mm-hmm. And maybe it is, but it's a lot less affordable than it used to be. How does that play into all this?
Well, that's probably the biggest piece of the puzzle and the biggest area to really devote some effort to try and make things happen. State Department of Housing this year got some increased funding for the Housing Trust Fund. That's going to be able to be used for affordable housing or shelter or what, however they're going to define that. But that's some new resources, returning resources, actually, into the kitty. But it's all about housing. We struggle to take people and find a house, apartment that they can afford and maintain. It's costly. So I think we're all struggling with what's the right regional strategy to address affordability.
What do you make of what your current board of supervisors at the county has decided to do on this? It seems like they're engaged. It seems like they really wanted to take some action on this. What does that say to you about where they're at as a group?
They're definitely engaged. And, you know, I have to take all my contracts for approvals to the board. And there is always discussion. When they approved the most recent package, every member talked about how important our work was, how important our partnerships were. Again, nobody's saying Maricopa County is going to do it alone. Other amazing things are happening in Phoenix and the other cities throughout the valley. So we want to be players. We want to be part of the solution. And we have pieces of this puzzle, the workforce, the justice connection, the jails, and all that stuff. But they're very committed, even in spite of all the crushing mandates within Maricopa County, funding the justice system, right? Things like elections. Mm-hmm. There are statutory mandated functions. But this is an important topic for our board, and our chairman has been out speaking about it. They all say to me that whenever they go to public events, this comes up.
Bruce Liggett is Human Services Director for Maricopa County.
Phoenix's Justice Center for Homeless Seniors is facing an uncertain future after serving homeless people 55 and older for more than a decade. Nancy Hempe sits on the center's board of directors, and earlier this month, she told the Arizona Republic's Lori Roberts that the center is, quote, ridiculously close to closing. Since the column ran, Executive Director Wendy Johnson says donations have poured in, enough to secure the center's future for just the next 6 months. But that doesn't mean Justice Center is in the clear just yet, and without it, hundreds of people may not have a safe place to go.
Cities that look at their blighted areas and say, how can we bring this back to life, is an important part, but we don't build affordable housing at the same rate we build new housing. And that's a break in our system nationwide.
These aren't people who have been homeless for most of their lives. Many people today are becoming homeless for the first time after age 50. And we asked Wendy what it would mean to those folks if Justice Center did close.
Well, not to be dramatic, but they would die because there is no place for them to go and know they're safe.
This problem isn't unique to Arizona. Kevin Prindeville is the executive director of Justice in Aging, a national legal advocacy organization focused on senior poverty. And I spoke with him more about this growing population and what's behind its recent rise.
Well, it's really a mix of a lot of economic factors, including the fact that this older generation is one that really suffered from the Great Recession. They were likely to lose jobs, but not get rehired. Had to spend down equity and savings that they had just to get through that period. And now they're growing older and finding that a lot of what they thought was going to be available for them in terms of their savings or some home equity isn't there. And then at that same time, we're seeing rising housing costs in a lot of these urban areas, driving these seniors out of their homes and too often into the streets.
And are there particular populations within this that are more affected?
Yeah, we're seeing that women are more impacted by this as they grow older. Women are much more likely than men to be poor as they grow older. We also see that seniors of color are more likely to be impacted by poverty as they age. So we think that the cause for that is the discrimination that those groups face throughout their life. You know, less access to education opportunities, to employment opportunities, more likely to spend time out of the workforce caring for family throughout their life. And then as they grow older, they have less resources to draw from to care for themselves.
Yeah. So, I mean, are we talking about people who were largely in the middle class already and then ended up in this situation based on these various circumstances you're describing? Or are we talking about people who were already having trouble with their finances throughout their lives?
Yeah, well, we're seeing both. You know, we've seen traditionally that, of course, people that are struggling in poverty throughout their life also face that struggle as they grow older. But the recent trend has been also people that are middle class throughout their life, have jobs as teachers and nurses and have done all the right things. They're now finding themselves economically insecure and facing homelessness as they grow older. So it's really something that shocks them. Mm-hmm. It's their first time experiencing this type of insecurity. So, yeah, it's troubling.
Yeah, yeah. There are then challenges with helping this group when they do become homeless, right? Give us a sense of what those look like.
Yeah, right. So this is a group that, you know, especially those that are newly homeless for the first time as they're older, there's special challenges to meeting their needs. One, they are likely to have serious health conditions. So a homeless person in their mid-50s is likely to have health conditions similar to someone who's not homeless who's in their 70s or 80s. They haven't really navigated these systems of support before. If they're newly homeless, they're not familiar with homeless services. They don't know where to go. They don't know how to navigate the help that is available. It's also common for older people that are experiencing homelessness to also have recently experienced some loss, a divorce or a separation from a partner or the death of a partner. And so they're also dealing with this, you know, emotional weight of a loss that also has this economic impact. And then also disability is a common condition for older people that face economic challenges. You know, they're maybe dealing with a new or a more serious disability that needs both medical attention but also needs accommodation in any services they're receiving from a provider.
Yeah. One thing we reported on here at KJZZ is elder abuse and the kind of growth of that, or at least the recognition of that. Is that a factor here?
Yeah, that's a factor as well. You know, there's alarming rates of elder abuse happening. Sometimes that can be the trigger for the homelessness because maybe somebody has been frauded financially, or maybe they've been in an abusive relationship and had to flee the home. Mm. And unfortunately, too often domestic violence centers that are set up to serve victims of domestic violence, survivors of domestic violence that are also homeless, they tend to cater towards younger women with families and not as many cater specifically to older women.
And that leads me to my next question, which was about the idea of sort of pitting groups against one another. Like, do you often see elderly people kind of get the short end of the stick, for lack of a better phrase?
Yeah, well, what we've seen is that since this is a new trend of older homeless people, not all service providers have developed systems to account for that. So centers might have rules that actually impede access for older people, like rules that prohibit medications from coming into a facility. But an older person who's, you know, in their 60s is likely to have some medications, maybe some heart medications or, you know, other medication that they need to take.
Yeah. So what can we all do? What can communities do to help this population in particular, especially as we start to see service providers like Justice Center, you know, struggling to stay open?
We need to better understand the problem. There's some data and research that's happening, but we need more research so that we can identify the data about exactly how many older people are affected by homelessness, the causes. And then we also need service providers to work together, to collaborate, to identify best practices and implement those best practices for serving this group.
Kevin Prindeville is the executive director of Justice in Aging.